Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. So are you ready to roll the dice on reopening? Apparently, in Vegas, they are, as the governor of Nevada announced last night that June 4th, that's a week from tomorrow, they'll reopen for gambling and resort stays at Las Vegas casinos. The big casino in New York opened yesterday. That's right, they're back on the trading floor in person at the New York Stock Exchange. That was the reopening bell rung by Governor Cuomo. Both the casinos and the stock exchange have social distancing rules in place. We'll see in the coming weeks if they work. We'll talk later this hour specifically about best practices for reopening workplaces safely with George Washington University professor and former Baltimore Health Commissioner, Dr. Lena Wen. She'll also discuss best practices for reopening your personal life. Then there's the complex question of whether and how to reopen schools that every school district in America is grappling with. Dr. Anthony Fauci admitted in his recent Senate testimony that he hasn't figured it out.
I don't have an easy answer to that. I just don't. You know, we just have to see on a step-by-step basis as we get into the period of time with the fall about reopening the schools, exactly where we will be in the dynamics of the outbreak. I might point out something that I think has been alluded to throughout some of the questions, that we have a very large country and the dynamics of the outbreak are different in different regions of the country.
So the candid Dr. Fauci recognizes it's complicated and he doesn't have all the answers. But the president of the United States, after hearing Fauci there, not so much.
I was surprised by his answer, actually, because it's just, to me, it's not an acceptable answer, especially when it comes to schools. The only thing that would be acceptable, as I said, is professors, teachers, etc., over a certain age. I think they ought to take it easy for another few weeks, 5 weeks, 4 weeks, who knows, whatever it may be. But I think they have to be careful because this is a disease that attacks age and it attacks health. And if you have a heart problem, if you have diabetes, if you're a certain age, it's certainly much more dangerous. But with the young children, and students, it's really, just take a look at the statistics. It's pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing. Joining me now with her take on how and when to wear, when and where and how to reopen schools to best protect children, parents, and teachers is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten. She was previously head of the United Federation of Teachers, the local union that represents teachers in New York City, and she has a Washington Post op-ed called "This Summer We Can Test Drive Best Practices for Safely Reopening Schools." Hi, Randy. Always good to have you on. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's always good to be with you, Brian, and it has been one of the one of the things that has been very gratifying to me is that I spent most of the COVID real intense time in Inwood in our neighborhood. So it's great to always be in New York and be in solidarity with New Yorkers.
Yes, we are neighbors within a few blocks, but we never see each other. We ran into each other in a restaurant once a few years ago. I think that was it. And now
exactly.
we couldn't if we wanted to.
And if we wanted to, we could get a wave from the park with masks on.
I want to dive right into the heart of that Trump clip there and that thing that he has now said several times. And I'm curious, in all seriousness, as a teachers union leader, what you're thinking about the issue. The president said teachers over a certain age take it easy for another couple of weeks, 5 weeks, 4 weeks, who knows, but I think they have to be careful. Now, he put it in the most ham-handed possible way, as if another few weeks solves the problem, but the CDC guidelines for reopening schools also ask, is the school ready to protect children and employees at higher risk for severe illness. So my question is, are you thinking yet as a union leader specifically about different accommodations or policies to protect older teachers and staff once schools reopen?
Yes, of course we are. And one of the things, but what I want to also say is I would actually wish the president would be just as concerned about the disproportionate impact that COVID has had on communities of color and the disproportionate impact COVID has had on Indigenous people. I mean, there's, what you're seeing is people who are less healthy or who have pre-existing conditions are going to suffer more from a respiratory disease. And, and if you think about New York, for example, a respiratory disease, one of the things we know is that people who have asthma will suffer more. And, so this ham-handed approach by the president, and look, I'm really angry about it. He downplayed it from the beginning. He's downplaying it now. He has, he's focused on his reelection and that, some economist whispered to him that if he reopens quickly, he will have a V-shaped recovery and that will be helpful for him for his reelection. And that is what's going on here, not the protection of people, not the dealing with a virulent, novel disease. But, just in terms of answering a question, then I can get to the broader issues, because we've studied a lot of this. We spent 4 or 5 weeks talking to every epidemiologist and virologist and, other policy, policy people we could think of to talk to. And we produced a 22-page guidance 4 weeks before the CDC about what, about how you reopen safely. But to answer your question directly, mm-hmm. The Americans with Disabilities Act requires reasonable accommodation of people who may have disabilities. And we believe that that act is absolutely appropriate now in terms of people, whether it's kids or teachers, who may be immunocompromised, who may have pre-existing conditions. That's what the, that's what the issue is. In terms of a respiratory illness, and given so many uncertainties, the most certain thing we can say, as Dr. Fauci said, is that everything is uncertain. And so given so many uncertainties, I think it's wise for school districts to be planning about hybrid models. And there can be lots of different roles that teachers can play in a hybrid model with remote learning. But remote learning can't be the centerpiece of schooling. It can't be it's not a substitute. It is what we used in an emergency.
Right. And let me jump in and we'll get to some details about what you think hybrid learning could be. That's okay. But are you saying, in answer to the original question, that age itself, considering who's vulnerable to the coronavirus's worst effects, age itself, over 60 or whatever the cutoff would be, should be considered a pre-existing condition for these purposes?
Correct. And because we don't know enough, what we do know is that 40% of the deaths have happened in nursing homes. In congregate living facilities of people who are disproportionately older. But we also know from the doctors and nurses have been the wartime heroes here, and the respiratory therapists there, and the researchers. What we also know is that there appears to be a disproportionate impact, meaning of the severity of this virus, if you have certain pre-existing conditions, including respiratory ailments, heart ailments, obesity, and other kinds of pre-existing conditions. And so
help me out with this specific here, because I'm sure that the That there are many teachers, and we'll open up the phone specifically for teachers here in just a second for Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. I'm sure there are many teachers, I've started to hear from them individually, who say, gee, I'm 62 and I'm not ready to retire, or even I'm 52 and I'm not ready to retire, but I don't feel safe going back into the classroom. What do you do for those people?
I think we have to create reasonable accommodations. And under the ADA, I believe that that is in order and legally required. But this is the dilemma, because in the absence of real information, like, that's why part of why we did a plan was because you cannot reopen by just flicking a switch or flipping a switch. It's ridiculous. And more people, and you saw it in the Ipsos poll yesterday, that in the absence of the planning that needs to go on, people are going to watch Donald Trump and his recklessness, and they're going to say, I don't want to risk it, even with a mask, you know, even with social distancing, because how are we going to have these kind of routines? So why is it that public schools are doing less planning? I mean, our union is doing a lot of planning. You can see private schools are meticulously doing planning. You can see businesses are meticulously doing planning. I get consultant reports up the wazoo from, you know, people who say, let us do your planning for your COVID reopening.
So you're saying it's not just President Trump, who's an easy target in a certain respect, but it's also the many local school districts, including New York City, would you say, who are not doing the planning?
I would say they're not doing enough planning because they are immobilized, Brian, by the fact that when you start doing this planning, you realize that we actually need more money next year, not less. Michael Mulgrew and I did like a back of the envelope calculation.
He's the current head of the city teachers union.
Head of the city teachers union, where we said, so that's why what's important, the specifics here and the details here are important. So I have pressed our leaders around the country to start thinking about models, because in the absence of that, fear, legitimate fear, takes over. And that's why I'm not surprised that the Ipsos poll this week showed one out of five teachers are thinking, oh my God, I got to retire. That's why you see a lot of parents saying, I don't know if I'm going to bring my kids back to school, because what they're thinking is about this false choice of lockdown or just reopen as if tomorrow was a normal day, right, like we had last June.
Good. So let's get into some of the particulars.
That's the flaw.
And teachers, the phones are for you in this segment. To the specific first question that I asked, older teachers, do you think standards or accommodations based on age need to be developed?
646-435-7280. Yes.
And if so, what? And what are your plans, or what are you grappling with, older teachers? 646-435-7280. And what else do you think is needed, teachers, at your school to reopen safely? What will be needed educationally to shore up the holes and disparities this semester of at-home learning? And what are those disparities? If, as you're experiencing them, help us report this story, or any questions, seeking advice, or anything else you have for American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten, 646-435-7280. Teachers, this one's for you, 646-435-7280. Let's get into some of these hybrid models and what
okay.
they
Can I just give you kind of the way I have we have thought about it?
Yes.
Because we, in this 22-page plan, which frankly the CDC's public health guidance was very much like the stuff that we put out 3 weeks ago, which is you have to think about five things, and then you can get into the details for what a model looks like, a hybrid model looks like. The five things are, you have to do what Governor Cuomo has been doing, which is very transparently showing New Yorkers how the curve has gone down. Not that it's been flattened or plateaued, but it's gone down so that there is very little community spread of virus in a community. That's not happening in other places, but it's happening in New York. It has to be down for 14 days in a row so you see very little spread of the virus in the community. The second thing, which everybody's been talking about, is you have to have a testing, a tracing, and an isolation infrastructure. And the best way I can say this is it would be great, and we'd have very few, we'd have a very different situation if every person going into a school got a test in the morning, like Donald Trump and Mike Pence do, as well as anybody who's meeting with them.
Do you want that for your union members? Do you want them to be tested every day on the way into school?
You want people to know that they're not positive. And if you could have this kind of fast test where you can figure out if somebody, because so many people who have the virus are asymptomatic. So if we had what Trump and Pence had, that would be one thing. But let me ask you, the logistics and the cost of 60 million people getting tested each and every day is not going to happen. But if you did, and you knew everybody in that building was negative that day, it would be a really different scenario. But the third issue, and this is where, you know, all the rubber hits the road and all the questions, you have to marry the public health tools that reduce the spread of virus, whether it's the physical distancing or it's all of these, the physical distancing, the masks, the washing your hands, and the sanitation. You have
so
to
before we go to the phones,
tools.
How do you do the social distancing? Because I know from growing up in the New York City public schools, and I know from my kids being there, these classrooms are generally packed shoulder to shoulder. How do you do social distancing?
You're going to have to, and this is where working with parents, which is number four, and this is where the money issues, which is why we're pushing so hard for the HEROES Act, is so important. The way you do the social distancing, this is why you've heard people say you have to have the classes. You have to have, so you have to either stagger time, mornings and afternoons. And when you and I, because I'm 62 years old and I'm an asthmatic. So every time I hear a teacher who is concerned about this, I feel that pain every single day. And so if you have, remember when we were younger, we had double and triple sessions. What if you had double sessions, a morning session and an afternoon session? And what if you cleaned the school in the middle of the day? What if you actually used, because high school students may not have to come in as much as elementary and middle school, what if you actually used every school building in the city of New York for elementary and middle, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday? Morning, one session, afternoon, another session, cleaning the schools in the middle of the day, then you would actually be able to, half it. What if you brought high school kids in just on Fridays and did a lot of project-based instruction and did stuff in a hybrid way? What if, so you can do this. Other countries are doing this. You can figure out how to create a seating plan. And frankly, if you create routines about washing hands and about physical distancing, and we have to think about what we do in terms of masks, you can do this. And the question really becomes, is it more important for kids to see each other, to be engaged in this way, in relationship building, than to be at home, where frankly, in that same poll where 1 in 5 teachers said they were unlikely to go back to school if the schools reopened in the fall, 2/3 said they haven't been able to properly do their job in this remote process. Right. So none of these are without risk, and all of these are judgment calls.
So with Randy Weingarten, American Federation of Teachers president, David in Westchester, a Brooklyn science teacher, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling in. Hi.
Yes, good morning. First of all, peace to the world. I must say that the first thing we really need to do, I agree with what's being said about planning. We've had absolutely zero planning. And we've had absolutely zero education as far as the real information about virology, epidemiology, the whole nine yards. All right. I'm 63 years old. I am not afraid at all to go back to school today. And I'll tell you why. Because viruses circulate the world very rapidly. And another thing is, coronaviruses have been around for a long time. I'm not saying there's not any big danger. But what I am saying is that we haven't had the people talk about the real information. That even includes Dr. Fauci. I hate to say it, but it does.
I think we're going off on a tangent here about that may veer into conspiracy theories and alternative theories of the existence of the whole thing that I think I don't want to do in this particular segment. We're going to keep it on teachers. So Kat in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kat.
But Brian, let me just say that.
Go ahead, Randy.
Right. But the one issue that we've known, and you've known me for a long time, and I did a lot of health and safety work in New York City's school system when I was coming up the ranks. The most important piece we have to do in a public health crisis is consistency of information and honesty of information. And part of the problem is that the virus has been so downplayed, and it's been a really chaotic response. And so if you get your news from Fox, you're going to see something really different than if you get your news from CNN. And that's a dilemma here that some of us are trying to solve. Sorry.
Right. No. And I think that caller was from a different camp that may be related to anti-vaxxers, and that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But Kat in Brooklyn,
exactly.
You're on WNYC. Hi, Kat.
Hi, I am a cluster teacher, which means that I teach every child in a school. So I'm scratching my head saying, how is this going to work for a cluster teacher? Drama, art,
it's not
going to
happen this year.
Gym teacher.
Yeah.
And so then my question, so first of all, I just want to thank Randy and for being there for us. And Brian, thank you for having Randy.
Sure.
And so I'm asking myself, how is this going to happen even with a hybrid model? The other thing, I have the utmost respect of my custodial staff, but there's not enough manpower. So there's two schools in my building, which Randy knows is common, an elementary school and a middle school. So I don't know how the custodial staff is even, we're talking about cutting budgets. So how are they even going to have the manpower to go in between morning and afternoon, and how is it going to work with a cluster teacher? I think my biggest thing is people say, well, how do you see it work? I don't know how it's going. I don't see it working. I also think that if teachers were able to sit down together, we could help figure it out. And part of my biggest issue right now is that the mayor's panel of 45 people, Mulgrew's on there for us, and he's the voice for us. But there's 44 other people that have never stepped foot in a classroom in the DOE teaching a class. So I think we need the teachers to come together to figure out how it can happen. And
right.
I totally
do. You have any particular suggestion, Kat? You have anything you want to throw out? And I think for people who don't know what cluster teacher is, like, for example, a teacher who teaches reading, let's say, and the various kids from the various regular classrooms in elementary school will cycle into the cluster teacher's classroom at various times during the week. And so she winds up having contact with all the kids. And I know, Randy, that they're talking about besides the staggered schedules that you mentioned, A teams and B teams of students and teachers.
Correct.
So if infection spread through one group, they're not, spread to the other group. So can you do a cluster teacher model in that situation?
So this is how I would approach it, Kat. First off, you're completely right. And that's why in our plan, which is on for all your listeners, Brian, it's on aft.org. Anybody can take it, can download it. And we're working with lots of parents groups on this. and teachers, obviously. But I think that what we've seen effective in other countries is this kind of pod situation, which is what, you know, some families are also doing right now, which is they're opening their pod to other people who haven't had the virus, you know, and they're opening it up to 4, 5, 6, 10 people. If we have like Brian, say you were teaching first grade and you taught the same 15 kids every day, you saw them every day, and that would be what would be limited. I think in terms of clustering, Kat, we're going to have to do it from a distance. Now, there may be a way to do it from a distance in a gym with masks and with social distancing. There may be ways of doing it. And I agree with you, if teachers got together in small groups wearing masks right now, you know, physically distant, or doing it on Zoom, and started to think the what ifs, then you would actually be pretty ingenious and come up with ways to do this where kids and you are 6 feet apart and maybe having to wear masks. But, you know, what do you do in terms of music, and what do you do in terms of other things? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some things may not work, but the cluster teachers could also very much do, for example, our projects on Zoom. We may be able to do music on Zoom. We may be able to do, like I take a Zoom, you know, training class once a week, and I would never have thought that that would work, but it's working. And so, you know, there may be other things we can do, but people have to talk to each other. And the last thing that Kat said is that it's going to cost more. You're going to have to do double cleaning. What about the PPE? What about the cleaning supplies? And that's part of the reason why we need federal aid for states, localities, and schools.
Margo in Westchester, you're on WNYC, New York City, or you're a public, I don't know if in the city or wherever, it doesn't matter, you're a public school teacher, right, Margo?
Yes, I am a public school teacher. First of all, I've been teaching for 30 years, and I've never been more happy to not be an administrator. I can't even imagine the stress, and I give you a humongous amount of credit, Randy and all the other administrators. So I work in a school that
she's
has
an administrator
wonderful
of a union, not a school principal, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Right. But I'm saying to be in a position of responsibility and having to make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It's hard enough what I'm doing from home, but it's a whole different level of stress. Anyway, I appreciate it.
Although what you're doing from home is incredible, so thank you.
Thank you. So I work in a school that is, I would say, the best of circumstances. It's a public school in Westchester, and we have all the equipment that we need, and we've really got to jump on our planning. We were ready for distance learning, blah blah blah. But I'm 61. I have asthma. I don't feel like a delicate flower, but I'm definitely aware. And I don't really go out at all except for grocery shopping. I cannot wrap my brain at all around how, even if the classrooms are, if we're able to come somehow, you know, space out the kids in the classroom, the hallways, the switching of the classes, what used to be normally shoulder to
shoulder.
Margo,
what grade do you teach?
So I'm a high school teacher.
What grade do you teach?
I'm a high school teacher.
So I think what happens.
Go ahead, Randy. Go ahead, Randy.
I think high schools, we're going to end up, look, because we've worked on this for so many weeks, and because, I mean, I even did 2 all-nighters in writing this report. We'd worked on it for so many weeks, and because I, you know schools, I'm going to throw out some ideas. I think high schools, we should be thinking about high schools as less in-person and more remote. I think if we actually had our high school kids once a week or twice a week, and we really thought much more about project-based instruction and creating teams of high school students in terms of the powerful instruction that high school teachers have always wanted to do and the teamwork that they've always wanted to do, that's going to look different. And it may not, and so, But if you think about an elementary school or a middle school, you can stagger the time that kids are in the hallway. So even for buses, say you had buses, you know, half the kids were on a bus instead of all the kids. Say you had buses that the first grade would slowly walk to buses like at, you know, 2:15 to 2:30. And the second grade would walk to buses from 2:30 to 2:45. You could actually do, for example, grab and goes in classrooms as opposed to in a cafeteria. But it's a matter of thinking about it not as a big public school, but as a small private school would be, and how you create smaller sized classes, mm-hmm, and smaller groupings
within the bigger buildings. We're almost out of time.
Correct.
I appreciate the granular level at which you're coming at a lot of this stuff, which is what I was hoping for in this segment. And obviously, this is the beginning of the conversation, not the end. But I want to touch on one thing before you go about the current moment. While schools are closed most places, I'm curious if you have a take on educating the children of essential workers' kids, the children of essential workers, their kids. Like if the parents are out working at the supermarket or whatever the job is, New York City has those rec centers, theoretically, for essential workers' kids, among others who shouldn't be home. What's your take, if you have one, on what's working and what's not for those kids?
Look, you know, kids have gotten huge life lessons, Brian, but let's not fool ourselves. There's remote learning this is an emergency situation. And that's part of the reason why I wrote that op-ed for the Washington Post today. I know that, you know, people are surprised when I lean into we need to reopen, but safely and responsibly, not recklessly, like Trump has said. But there's a lot of things that are falling through the cracks. The lack of connectivity, the fact that the cable companies have not stepped up to just basically give everybody connectivity. The rec centers are working, but you've got a lot of kids and a lot of families who are basically taking care of each other during the day and doing the best they can in this circumstance. Next year has to be looked at as a bridge year, as a year where we try to figure out where kids are and how to meet their emotional needs, as well as teachers, obviously, as well as the communities, but also meet their learning needs. Right. And so we think about next year as a bridge year.
Randi Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, her op-ed in the Washington Post today is this summer we can test drive best practices for safely reopening schools. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Stay safe, please.
You too.